Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday. TGIF here on Sports Daily. We are so glad to be with you, getting you ready for the weekend. It is Jacob Albracht alongside Tommy Kester. Jad Chambers producing. He's got the IHOP hotline for you. 869-1240. Celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves, by the way. All your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. It is a Friday. It is the eve of the American League Divisional Series. It includes an old, old rivalry between the Royals and the Yankees. I know fans are excited about that. We're excited about that. We'll take a deep dive into that series today. We'll take a deep dive into the football weekend with our pals Paul Savage, TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner. They stopped by to make some picks. I know Jad is really excited to go over last week's results, so we'll let Jad do that as well. He's been begging to go over those results from last week. Not sure why, but we'll do that a little later in the show. We'll preview a little bit the Chiefs. We get some Rashee Rice news that we need to get to today and what does it mean and everything moving forward. So we'll have that for you as well. College football weekend, it's all coming for you. You had Thursday night football last night. We've got some giveaways today. We'll give away a little HTO for you as well, a chance to win some free tea and free coffee. So be sure to tune in and stay tuned for your opportunity to win that. You can get in touch with the program, not just on that IHOP hotline, but you can reach out to us via video as well. 12 News Plus connected, where you can see us. We appreciate everybody that watches there on your smart devices, on your phones, whatever it is. Also on Facebook, YouTube, and X, you can reach out to us. And you can leave us your voicemails on the Odyssey app. If you don't listen to us live over the air, but you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, you can leave us that voice message. We'll get that. It's real easy to do. You just push the little microphone while you're listening, and that comes straight to us. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm tired today. I don't know why. You know, when we were younger, probably like in our 20s, maybe even as a teenager, you get to Friday and you just feel energized because it's the weekend and you're excited about it. Now I get to Friday and I'm exhausted. It's just like a long week. And I feel it this morning, but we're going to power through. We're going to be okay. Going to try to drink all the coffee possible and get through it.
We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for allowing Tommy to do that. There's like a vat of it at the Odyssey Studios that we stay pretty fueled up with. So thanks, Prairie Fire. I'm with you. I think it's the kids. We ran a story yesterday on 12 News, and I read it, about like when you feel the effects of aging. And I think it said like 44 and 60. And I'm like,
no.
I don't know about that. I would say more like the second you have a kid, and then it just kind of goes from there. I do recall, and I think I was about 27 years old, where hangovers became real bad. Like, oh, what is this? Like, oh my goodness, this sucks. I would say that was the first moment, and now it's more like your body hurts and it takes a while to recover from things. Your kid, I'm with you. But 44, I don't know that I agree with the medical experts on that one. I think it comes much sooner.
Yeah, try being in your late 30s with little kids. That really will do it. And you and I are both in the same boat. Your kids are a little bit older than mine. But I mean, that's rough. And I always think, you know, when my kids are like, hey, get on the floor and play with me, daddy. And I'm like, man, if I were 10 years younger, I would have all the energy in the world to do that. And now if I get on the floor, I worry I can't get back up. So, it is what it is. We actually, my wife and I had our oldest son is now in preschool, and we got our first not positive report from the teacher yesterday, which, you know, that was kind of jarring. That's never happened before, like in my life,
perfect, right?
Well, for sure. And, you know, it's like, well, he's having a little bit of trouble listening. I mean, a little bit of trouble following the rules. And, you know, the teacher asked, how do you get him to listen? And we were like, honestly, if you can figure it out, please tell us, because we're trying that too every day.
I related. I have my two older kids are girls, and they're perfect angels most of the time. Like, they don't get in trouble. They don't do that. Like, the thought of getting in trouble at school is a threat enough for them. My son just started kindergarten. And when they get in trouble, they have to walk laps. It's like question every day off the bus. Did you walk laps today?
Yeah.
I would walk overlapped. Usually just talking in class or whatever, but it's so funny. Like, and for the girl, like before he can even get it out, the girls get off the bus. He had to walk laps today. And I'm like, okay, narcs, like, right. Let's not do that. Right. Like, he's your brother. You got to defend him. You got to try and like help him out here. But yeah, it's the same kind of thing. He's just talking and he's so excited. He's never met a stranger in his life. So he's walking some laps, and my wife used to be a little more concerned about it. And I'm like, don't be concerned about that. Like, he's not, if he's fighting, like, well, yeah, we'll be concerned. But if he's just talking, I said, we used to have to do push-ups when I was in school. And you didn't make it through most days without doing 40, 50 push-ups.
Right.
You just decided to run your mouth or whatever it was. Like, it's just a part of being a guy.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that we're working on with our 3-year-old that we're getting reports about is, and they always, I love the way that they try to frame it, you know, so it like kind of softens the words. You know, but the teacher will be like, well, we might need to talk to him about keeping his hands to himself.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you're telling me that he's like,
stop
pushing, hitting, punch, like whatever it is. You know, and it's just like, well, you know, he and his little friends, they, you know, they kind of like, they're roughhousing. They're 3-year-old boys. Like, they're wrestling with each other. Like, that's part. And I'm not trying to downplay it and say you shouldn't do that. But at the same time, it's like,
downplay it for sure. Okay, I got the same report at for my son in preschool. Same report. I'm trying to think of the terminology is one of my favorite things. I don't remember if they said like soft hands or
it's soft, gentle hands, soft hands.
Yes,
you know, we don't touch our friends.
Wrestling every day at recess.
Things like that.
They'd go at recess and they'd wrestle.
Right.
I'm like, that's not bad. Like, that's what they do. Like, yeah, we'll tell him like, hey, you need to. But on the side, I'm like, Michelle, this is totally normal. She's never been around. My wife has never been around. She had a sister and her mom, and I had all boys. And I mean, I had my mom, but I was the youngest of 5 boys at that point. She didn't stand a chance. So like, we have to help each other with what's happening. And I'm like, that you don't need to worry about this. Like, 2 things. Boys wrestle. I always tell her this. I'm like, we can tell our daughters that the oven's hot and they're not going to touch that oven. Our son's going to make sure. He's going to touch that oven just to make sure it's hot. Like, we're idiots. We're dumb.
It's
we
very true.
Run into things. Like, that's the way it is.
And we don't outgrow it.
Absolutely. That's why I think we understand it, though. Like, I get where you're coming from. You're just wrestling around with your buddies. Like, I get it. Did you win?
Right.
You know, like, that's you know, that's the reality of it. I try to give her that. And she tries to give me advice with the girls. And it's helpful because we have a 4th grader. And, you know, there's emotions coming into the mix where I'm like, what is happening here? And she, you know, she's trying to help me. But with the son, I'm like, two pieces of advice. Like, we're dumb. We're going to fight and wrestle and play. And like, you can't overreact to that. And 2, as he gets older, don't ask questions you don't want the answer to, right? Like, just if you think you know the answer, you know the answer, and leave him alone. That, you know, like that. That's kind of the way you got to do it here. And it's very different. It's gonna be hard for her, but yeah, we're with you on that. So just know that our son also had soft hands and made what they called some sad choices in class, and now he walks laps because, you know, it's fine. It's what they do.
All the different strategies now in today's world with kids compared to when we were kids. And I'm sure even before that, it's funny because, you know, you mentioned like making sad choices. The terminology now, like with our son is, you know, you need to make a smart choice. And I'm like, okay, well, he's a little boy. He's an idiot. Like, I'm not sure that there's going to be a lot of smart choices. There's going to be some really sad ones, you know, as the years go on.
Sad choices is, I use that now. Like, the second I heard that, if you went out and you partied too hard and you're texting your buddies the next day of like how bad everyone feels, usually it's, yeah, I really wish I wouldn't have made so many sad choices last night.
Yeah.
I'm really regretting those. So anywho, man, what a time to be alive. JB on our video stream said he noticed the aging starting at 38, and that it's gradual. We're clear of that age now, JB. I noticed it earlier. I noticed it once we started having kids and I just stopped sleeping. Basically, we're to the point now where we can get a little more sleep into it. You're not quite there yet on that, but it comes. Yes, Chad.
I was just going to say, as somebody who doesn't have kids, that expert sounded about right. It was like 44.
44.
Okay.
Good to know. That was about right.
And that's, I could totally see that because physically, like, I feel things a little more, but it's not that bad. Like, usually you're just stiff for a minute and then it's gone, right? Like, it doesn't stay there, which probably is the shift at at 44. Anywho, you can chime in on any of the things we talk about, including life here on Sports Daily. Let's real quick, we'll set you up with this news here on Rashee Rice, and then we'll come back and we'll react to it a little bit. IR, it was a weird day of news yesterday. So what happened was you had Andy Reid come first in his you know, press briefing. And he basically said they're waiting for the swelling to go down so they can do more testing. And, quote, we'll see from there. Okay, so that comes down. And that tells me there's optimism. Honestly, that tells me there's optimism. Because I don't recall a time, Tommy, where it's been a torn ACL and they just didn't know it was a torn ACL right away. Swelling, no swelling, whatever. Like, when was the last time you remember a long and drawn out torn ACL diagnosis? And this is anecdotally. I'm not a doctor. I'd revert to Earl on this, one of our great callers who enlightens us in these places. So I would say, okay, well, that has to be at least optimistic. And then we get the news later in the day that the Chiefs are placing him on IR. And I think Adam Schefter was based at least in the lower third, because it was muted, that the thought is still torn ACL. Going to IR, I don't think means anything. He was always going to miss 4 weeks, even if this was the bone bruise sprain kind of stuff that you've seen. It was going to be four. It makes sense to put him on IR because you can use the roster space. But I don't think that means much. That's the official news of the day, Tommy. But I mean, I think it's at least better, you know, a better vibe than it was on Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, again, until we know something definitive, until they know something definitive, it's going to make it really difficult to assess, you know, the long-term timeline and trajectory of all of it. I do think that we ought to hope for the best, prepare for the worst. I think every Chiefs fan ought to do that. I think the team ought to do that as well. And if you get him back at some point in the season, consider that a bonus. Consider that, you know, a blessing. I think that, I mean, obviously he's on IR. It'll be a minimum of 4 weeks, but even if this comes back best case scenario, I have a hard time thinking that it's only going to be 4 weeks. And maybe I'm wrong on that. Again, I'm not a doctor, but you know, I'm sure that even best case scenario, you're probably looking at the latter part of the season, maybe the last few games, potentially, maybe. And then from there, I think really the hope would be, can you get him ready to go for the playoffs? And I wonder, and it brings up a big time question, I think. Let's just say, hypothetically speaking, the Chiefs get Rashee Rice back and available for the playoffs, and Hollywood Brown back and available for the playoffs. Those two guys haven't played together at all. They practiced together, but they haven't played together at all. How do you incorporate both of them into this offense for a playoff run? And then depending on if the Chiefs do anything additional, you know, with an acquisition of some kind, I just think that might be really convoluted.
Totally agree. And, you know, in the spirit of giving a hard time to you, that's why I would say, like, we don't know Hollywood Brown. That's why he was in the preseason, all of these things. I agree. I don't know what you would be able to do with him. He has not played a game. It was the first snap of game action he took for the Chiefs that he went down. So all he knows is practice. That's it. I think you could still use him, but you're not going to be able to use him at full strength. Not unless, I mean, the only scenario is maybe if, you know, if you get the bye and you could work him in for 2 weeks of practice at that point, I suppose. But that feels a little risky. And you got to remember too, like, Worthy will have become a bigger part of the offense than the last time Hollywood Brown was practicing. So it's different even than the work he already got in. I don't know. For Rice, I wouldn't be as concerned, obviously, because he's been in the offense. I think Rice could plug and play and be just fine. Would Hollywood being there alter Rice? Probably not. I don't think so. So yeah, you just hope you can get anybody back. What I think becomes really interesting, if you tell me, and I try to, like, if I'm Brett Veach and you tell me, yeah, we'll have Rice back if we make the postseason, then I'm far less inclined to do much, if anything at all, between now and then, unless our backs are against the wall. And right now, the Chiefs' backs are not against the wall. They're 4-0. And they're 4-0 knowing a style of football without Rice to get there. They didn't have Rice not that long ago, and they figured out an offensive style that allowed Mahomes to throw 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns and all these things 2 years ago when they didn't have any wide receivers either. So I would be, you know, I would be fine if I knew, if I'm Veach and I know Rice is going to be back by the postseason, then I'm cool just kind of rolling with it here for a little bit. If they find out he's not, that's when things change. That's when I would become aggressive, because I do think you push all your chips to the middle of the table for this season. And I'm usually not a proponent of that, but I am for this season. History's there. Kelsey's probably done after this year, at least I think, but I could be wrong about that. But there's lots of reasons to push chips to the middle of the table this year, if necessary. But if Rice is back in the postseason, I don't think it's necessary.
It's fun to speculate on potential names that they could go after and acquire and all of that. But from day one, I mean, all the way back on Monday, I cautioned that, you know, it's not really Brett Veach's MO traditionally to do this. And I know all of the different things that, you know, you've brought up and other people have brought up about, like, well, he has traded first round picks before to go get, you know, a guy that he wants. Yeah, but not midseason. And the acquisitions that he's made from a wide receiver perspective midseason, one was Mecole Hardman, who already had familiarity. The other one was Kadarius Toney, which was always going to be a project from day one, and had
that
more
was a third round pick. That was a pretty aggressive trade. That's, I forgot about that.
You know, so like I just don't think that, like, Brett Veach does. He's never striked me. Never struck me as whatever it is, as a general manager that is reactive. He's never really been a reactive in the moment, right? Like, yeah, in the middle of a season, like, this happened, now I'm forced to go and respond.
No,
but
I don't
from
think
a trade perspective, he's been proactive.
Think he's aggressive,
I think. He's aggressive,
yes.
But he wants to be proactive, which to me would signal that if they do make any kind of move or acquisition, if this ends up being a long-term injury for Rashee Rice, that it's not a push all the chips in at the middle of the table for right now and nothing else. It's going to be more about how can we set ourselves up for future success also. That's really been his MO.
Well, but proactive to me too, that's what that would mean. Because the proactive thing to do is to see, if Rice is done, to see the writing on the wall. He's going to be done for probably half the year at minimum next year. And who knows what happens with Hollywood Brown, who is on a short contract anyway. That's what tells me he would be proactive in being aggressive to get a receiver, because you've got to look not just at your chances this year, but what are they going to do next year? And if there's an opportunity to go get somebody that helps you now and in the future, that does make sense. The reservations I have on trying to guess whether they would or not is that they've never invested a ton of money in wide receivers. They've invested draft capital, tons. They traded for Toney. They drafted Sky Moore. They drafted Worthy. Like, they have used, they're not afraid of the draft capital piece of receiver. They just don't want to pay them. And so that's where different names and different things come into play. And I mean, who's the last receiver they really paid? What's his face from Clemson? His name just slipped my mind.
They paid Jeremy Maclin.
After that.
Did they pay Sammy Watkins?
Sammy Watkins, yes. Yeah. They paid Sammy Watkins, yeah.
I know they paid Jeremy Maclin, and that was years ago, but
right. Watkins,
they paid him
they
a lot.
They paid Watkins a decent amount, but since then, they've been sort of a discount receiver team. And so we'll see. But again, if Rice is back, if Rice doesn't miss the postseason, I don't know that they need to do anything. I think you just sort of ride it out a little bit. Because if Rice is back, if it's that injury and you know he'll be back and he won't have any ill effects, that she shouldn't on an injury like that, and you just welcome him back in the postseason, you get there. Now, if something, you know, if they lose their next four games or something, then maybe you change your tune on that, but I don't think that's going to happen. We'll tell you what we think is going to happen Monday as we make our picks in the next hour. All right, so that's the Rashee Rice news. Check that off. If you'd like to chime in on that, we can go back to it. But when we come back, we're going to talk ALDS, Royals, Yankees. The old guard of Royals fans know this means a little something extra when it's against the Yankees. The young Royals fans get to just hate on the Yankees, which is always fun to do, right? We'll come back. We'll preview that series. It's Albrecht and Castor at Sports Daily. Don't go away.
And 1240 KFN.
Portion portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. We appreciate Crestview's support of the show. Tom and I both members out there. We think you should give them a call and check out the facilities. Maybe you could be too. All kinds of different memberships. I went out and played about 7 holes yesterday, Tommy. Felt good just to get back out there. It doesn't matter. Well, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what I do or how I play on any particular hole. I usually end up right at the, like, somewhere between 10 and 12 over 9 holes every single time. Like, so, whether there's a good or hole or two or whatever, it's like the same ending outcome every time. Now, I will say, especially yesterday when I haven't played in a while, there was some foot wedge involved. But it, generally speaking, like, my game is just right there. That's where it is, and it doesn't seem to be moving.
One question, how often do you practice?
You mean by practice, do you mean when I actually go play?
No. Like, when do you practice your game? Like, on the range or on the putting green or the chipping green?
You know, I'd say probably
never?
Zero time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That happened to me a long time ago, and I was getting frustrated because I wasn't getting any better, wasn't, you know, playing any better. And a buddy of mine who's pretty good, I was complaining to him, and he's like, how often do you practice? I'm like, well, I don't. I just go out and play. And he's like, well, then what do you expect? You're not practicing. You're just going out and playing. I mean, like, it's fun to go and play, but if you actually truly want to get better and improve your score, you got to practice in anything you do.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of do and I kind of don't. I feel good about, like, as long as I'm not getting embarrassed on the court, I'm pretty good. Like, that, you know, if I can hit good shots and do those things, it's when you're constantly duffing that's fun. The time that I did go out and practice and do all that stuff, that's when I probably enjoyed golf the least. Like, when I would get really, really upset at a round, I'm like, that's not as fun as just coming out and playing. So I don't know if I'll ever get there. Anyway, Crestview, 36 holes of golf, lots of opportunities. Course looks great right now, by the way. So check it out. Give them a call. Tell us, tell them we sent you. Appreciate their support. All right, ALDS, here you go, Royals fans. Let's dig in. We know that Waka gets the ball in game one. We know that Reagans gets the ball in game two. We assume that Lugo will get the ball in game three. The first real question of the series will come in game four. We look back at the regular season here. The Royals did not fare well against the Yankees. They were 2-5 this year. They didn't hit. That was the issue. They scored 24 runs over 7 games, Tommy. I can do the math, but that's not very good. So I think You sort of reset things in the postseason. I don't know, you know, how many of those games they played. And the good news is they did win 2 of the last 4. So they lost the first 3, and then they won 2 of the last 4. They had that great, it was Lugo, right, that was on the mound for that really, really nice game on the road in September when they kind of had to have it. But I think you can wash your hands of just about everything right now in the regular season, especially with this Royals team. The only thing you could really look at is how the pitchers fared against that lineup at times, and they will. They'll study that, obviously. But I think you washed your hands of the Orioles series. I think they were 2-4 against the Orioles this year. So really, what difference does it make? But that is just FYI what happened in the regular season against the Yankees this year.
I wonder about which Royals mentality I prefer, like, where the team is better. Are they better when they are the hunter, or are they better when they're the hunted? Like, when their backs are up against a wall, when they're facing elimination potentially, or they're about to stumble their way out of the playoffs? Or is it better when they're riding momentum and they're playing really well and they're feeding off of that energy? We've seen both from the Royals this year to varying levels of success depending on the time of year and a lot of other factors. But I was thinking about that yesterday. Like, would I rather the Royals, you'd always rather them just run over everybody, right? And you know, not have to be challenged, you know, at all. That'd be nice. But that's not reality. So do the Royals respond better when they're the aggressor, when they're riding the momentum, or are they better when their backs are up against a wall and they have to have it?
I don't know that I would say they're better when their backs are against the wall, because we've seen the longer losing streaks in the season. I don't think it's going to matter, because there's never going to be any point in the remaining postseason, trying to imagine a scenario, there's not going to be a point going into any series where they're not the underdog, right? Like, especially before a series starts. Now, if they go up 2-0 on the Yankees, obviously that would change, but doesn't matter who they play the rest of the way, they are the underdog now of this postseason. That's not going to change. The Tigers, everybody's talking about the Tigers. They're red hot, all these things. And honestly, I think we could be thankful for that because nobody's paying attention to the Royals, right? At least that's what probably nationally, obviously we are. And, you know, people that really follow baseball are, but like fans or like the vibe in general, nobody's really looking at the Royals. And what that means is nobody has a good grasp of what this team is. I think the free and easy Royals are the best Royals, but free and easy comes with aggression. You know what I mean? Swag. Like, this is a swaggy team. So if they're confident, I'm confident. I don't like them as much with their backs against the wall. They haven't responded well in that scenario this year several times. They've had long losing streaks, right? They're capable of that. They're also capable of the long winning streak we know now. And so, yeah, I want them confident. I want them confident and everybody else overlooking them a little bit and so they can sneak up on you. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. just showed you in a series that he can carry it. He can carry the series. He just did against the Orioles. He had the two game-winning RBIs, had some incredible defensive plays. Like, they're going to need more offense than that, but he carried the series. You have that. You know you have that if you're the Royals. Now you see if Vinny can continue to add to the lineup. He can. He looked good to me. Can Salvi get on one of his heaters? Which is, when Salvi's on a heater, there may not be a hotter heater in baseball than when Salvi's on one. Can you catch one of those? He did not look good to me in that series.
I've mentioned it before that I don't know if there is another team in Major League Baseball currently that the pendulum swings so far from one direction to another in such a short period of time. I mean, less than 2 weeks ago, they were riding a 7-game losing streak. They were in danger of missing the playoffs. They had just gotten swept at home by the Giants, a team that didn't make the playoffs. That was the first time, and really the only time, that I've seen this entire season where, like, the body language was really bad. Like, they were down bad. There were articles written about the clubhouse and just how, you know, it was very close to just, you know, completely losing the clubhouse and just falling apart and collapsing the final week of the regular season. And then here we are. They sweep the Orioles in the wild card round after making it into the playoffs by turning things around in the final week of the regular season for the most part. And then, you know, here they are taking on the Yankees in game one of the ALDS tomorrow night. That's in less than 2 weeks. That's a less than 2 week span where, you know, the mentality, the body language, all of that shifted so dramatically. And we've seen that pendulum swing multiple times this year. Maybe not that far down. Like, again, that's the only time I've realized that it was that bad for a while. But there were really down periods this season, and then, of course, really high periods this season as well. Again, I don't think that there's another team in baseball that we've seen the roller coaster be so dramatic. Every team has it over the course of a long season, but I don't think to this extent.
Timing is everything in baseball, especially in the postseason. The Royals are not playing their best baseball right now. As far as the best baseball we've seen this team play this year, it's not right now. It's not.
Offensively, so, at least.
But the best version of this team has been the offense, you know, coming with the pitching where it is now. I think with the pitching, we've seen the pitching staff, at least in the rotation, get back to sort of what we're used to. And we've seen that for a few weeks now. They sort of got through that hump in August and got over that innings, you know, threshold straight. And now they're grooving to the point where we kind of saw them most of the season. That's why I'm confident in this team in the postseason, by the way. The bullpen, that's new. We haven't seen the bullpen be this effective at any point this season. So that's a little new. I don't know what to make of that. It's a good thing. The offense, though, is not anywhere near when this offense is at its best. Now, they didn't have Vinny Pasquantino. It sort of, you know, collided with that. So is him being there enough? I don't think it's enough, but it's a start to get, you know, the offense back to where it is sort of grooving at all cylinders. I love that they were aggressive on the base paths against Baltimore. I think they need to continue that in this series. And there will be moments, and I was yelling at the TV in some of them, when I'm like, what are you doing here? That's not the spot to run. I got to calm myself down on that because I do want them running. That's a part of the swag. That's a part of why the 14 and 15 Royals were so pesky to the rest of the post. Because if you can get somebody on base, not only can they just steal second, which of course they can, They can score from first. They can put pressure. They can do all those little things to make maybe makes the defense make an error. Those things where if you don't play clean baseball, this aggressive Royals team will come get you. So, you know, when Blanco stole that base late in the game with Bobby Witt Jr. up at the plate, that one I'm like, let's not do that because now they can pitch around Bobby Witt Jr. But, you know, for the most part, yeah, run wild. If you get thrown out at second, and look, think about it this way. Like, if they get thrown out at second and you're like, oh, that kills it. I'm like, guys, they haven't. When was the last time the Royals rallied, right? Like, they're not hitting it anyway. So, yeah, steal second so that if they get a single, it scores the run because they ain't hitting for any power right now. Extra base hit, what's that? You know, so it's okay. Steal. Try to steal. If you get thrown out, who cares? Right, you're probably hitting into a double play these days lately anyway.
I think we all know how incredible the pitching was in the two games for the Royals against the Orioles. They can pitch that well against the Yankees for sure, but the result is not going to be like it was against the Orioles. Like, the Yankees have enough pop in their lineup, and like, of course, like the top names of Judge and Soto and like all of that for sure. The Yankees are going to score more runs than the Orioles did in the wild card round. Even if the Royals pitch outstanding, the Yankees will score more runs. So you're not going to be able to get away with averaging a run and a half offensively if you're the Royals in the ALDS. I just don't think that we will be looking at a Royals series victory if they average a run and a half in their games in this series. So while the pitching has been incredible and it needs to continue, no doubt about it, and it doesn't really matter what they do. Like you just mentioned, it could be extra base hits and home runs and hit for power, which they haven't done in a while. More than likely, it's going to be playing more small ball and trying to find creative ways to move runners over and get them in. That's been the recipe the last couple of weeks. It hasn't been extremely fruitful, but it's been enough. They're going to have to do more than that, I think, in this series.
Run. I don't know if extra. Honestly, the hope is if the Royals are going to win a World Series, that they just start hitting for a little power, right? Like, I think that almost has to be a part of it. I think. I guess I'm just sort of assuming it'll happen at some point. So the dam will break and their offense will wake up a little bit, at least in the middle. If it doesn't, can they still do it? I mean, maybe. If the pitching's that good, but you're about to face the Yankees, I think that's asking a little much, right? You're about to face the Yankees. You know, if you get into the National League, you potentially face the Phillies, the Dodgers. They're going to have to hit. They're going to have to hit. Can they? I think they can. But we've been waiting for it to, you know, we've been waiting for that hot streak for a while now. And they, you know, you go up against Garrett Cole, you go up against Rodon. The Yankees can also pitch. The Yankees are really good. And I don't want to overestimate or overset expectations that are unrealistic for the Royals either. They're going to have to pitch their way too, but if they don't hit, it doesn't matter. Game one Saturday. I think the Royals are going to win this series. We'll just put it that way, Tommy. Where's your head at on this?
It's still a toss-up for me. I think that the... This is probably a fairly obvious thing. The winner of game one, I think, will win the series.
Really? With Walker going up against Cole?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know that obviously they're going to be able to come back with Reagans. They're going to be able to come back with Lugo, all of that. That's great. I just think from a momentum standpoint in a series like this, and especially knowing just the offensive struggles that the Royals have had, if they don't win game one, it's going to be a lot more difficult, I think, for them to win the series. So I'm going to go ahead and say whoever wins tomorrow night, in my mind, in the best of five, is going to win the series.
I don't agree that. I think if the Royals win game one, the Yankees are in real big trouble. But I absolutely think if the Royals lose game one, they can win the series, because they can lose to Cole twice in the series and still win the series. You know what I mean? And honestly, it's sort of that old strategy. Waka against Cole lets Reagan's Lugo pitch against not Cole, so they can each win a couple. You know what I mean? Like, there's that chicken and egg. Do you go ace versus ace, or do you sort of concede it? Now, that's not what the Royals are doing.
Hey, the Orioles went ace versus ace in game one with Corbin Burns.
And lost. I know,
and
right,
lost.
Yeah.
And Burns pitched a really good game, and they kind of squandered him because Reagan's was just that much better.
I know. I cannot wait. I'm so happy. I love it. I love that old Royals fans get to renew this old rivalry. These teams met a ton in the late 70s, like 5 years in a row or something crazy like that. We'll see. Starts Saturday. We'll have probably a little bit more on that in the second hour as we get you ready for it. You'll hear it here on KFH, these Royals playoff games, by the way. When we come back, let's talk just a little bit about Thursday night football, and then we'll come back. We'll make some picks to kick off hour number two. We'll talk a little high school football in hour number two. It's all coming for you here on Sports Daily. On the way out, let's give our HTO away, a free iced tea, a free coffee drink, iced or hot. Lots and lots of options. Get out there and check them out. All you got to do to win a couple of free ones is text the keyword TTEA to the short code 20357. These will be good in either Wichita location, at the Derby location as well. Good luck, everybody. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. That's TTEA to the short code 20357. We're coming right back with more Sports Daily. NFL football available for free here on KFH and the Odyssey app. You can tune in to 97.5 and 1240 KFH Sunday morning at 8:15 for coverage as the Jets square off against the Falcons in London. Simply download the Odyssey app and search KFH at game time. You heard Thursday night football last night here on KFH and the Odyssey app. There was that, you know, it was that slow-paced, drag-it-out game we all expected, right, Tommy? No, it was a like one of the bigger shootouts of the season. 66 points, an overtime win for the Falcons. Kirk Cousins, 509 yards and four touchdowns. Also threw an interception, but you want to talk about bucking some trends. Remember primetime Kirk Cousins? Never any good? He was good. Remember worst quarterback in the league against the blitz going up against one of the highest blitz rate teams in the NFL? Doesn't matter. Man, Kirk Cousins was on it last night as I have him. I did two things with two fantasy football teams, Tommy. I sat him last minute in one game for Sam Darnold, and I cut him in another league. I cut him. And that's he was awesome. Immediately picked up, and I'm like,
one of the leagues that you and I
Caleb
are in
Williams too.
One of the leagues that you and I are in together. I'm up against the guy that puts the league together, our buddy, Josh Howell. And he's 4-0 and I'm 2-2 in this league. And I started Drake London, who was obviously phenomenal. And he had Kirk Cousins on the bench. And so I feel pretty happy about that. I think my chances to get a win and give him his first loss of the year, I think, are pretty high.
It was a brilliant game plan. Credit to Atlanta's coaches. And Baker Mayfield was really good yesterday too, by the way. The Bucs really did let that one slip away. But a credit to the Atlanta coaches, because basically everything that you thought they should and could and would do, they did the opposite, and it worked. Like, we went into that game and it was like, all right, the Falcons should run the ball here. You know, you don't want to put Kirk in this bad situation. You don't want to do all these things. And man, he threw the ball 58 times. 58 times. That means he had the opportunity to be blitzed 58 times. It was like the bizarro world last night. But here we go. The Falcons now 3-2. The Bucs now 3-2. I actually think these are two pretty good teams. I don't know who my favorite in that division is right now. The Bucs were, you know, the Bucs did what they wanted to do too. They're good teams. That was such a refreshing primetime game because he had all the offense. It was close. You could feel how much Al Michaels appreciated finally getting a good Thursday night game. But that was a really, really fun way to start the NFL week, and hopefully a continuing trend that these offenses are waking up in the NFL now.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that game plan. I really believed that Atlanta would come in and they would lean really heavily on Bijan Robinson.
Yeah.
And Robinson got 12 carries. And he made the most of those 12 carries, but that wasn't the primary focus of the offense. And it worked. I think it caught the Buccaneers on their heels a little bit. And you know, credit to Baker Mayfield in the offense for Tampa Bay, because they hung with Atlanta. Like, they matched them, and
they should have won the game.
Yeah. And it took overtime, obviously, on a walk-off TD for Atlanta to get the victory. Remember, it wasn't that long ago. Like, it was a season ago that the NFC South as a whole was awful. Like, they were awful. And really it was the Baker Mayfield led Buccaneers that sort of rose to the top. And they were improved, and Baker Mayfield was better and had kind of had a career renaissance, but they weren't elite by any means. They made the playoffs, but it wasn't like they were a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Now you look at that conference, the Saints have been able to be pretty effective offensively, at least early on in the year. What we've seen from the Falcons and Bucks have been impressive so far. Really, outside of Carolina in the middle of a rebuild, the rest of that conference is really solid.
It's good. And it might, in Carolina, might not be that bad with Andy Dalton either. We'll see. They've been certainly better since he's taken over. What a fun game. What a great way to start the NFL week. Credit to you if you're one of the very few people who actually started Kirk Cousins last night on your fantasy team, because it was not the week to do it, you know, based on everything we've seen. He won a lot of people games on his own. What a fun game. God, I had so much fun with that game last night. I love offense in the NFL, and I'm so sick of this slow-going offense. I know I'm probably in the minority, at least of a certain nature, but I like to see good quarterback play and things like that. Let's come back. Let's pick some football games. Speaking of, we'll have Paul Savage in, Brandon Zinner, TJ Cleland. The gang is in. We'll make some picks. We'll get some heat. We'll have some fun with it. That's next on Sports Day.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, sports bettors, ready for some picks destined to fail? It's time to hear what the Sports Daily staff thinks of the weekend games.
Fridays on Sports Daily mean we're making football picks, which is always fun. We got the full cast in. TJ Cleland, Paul Savage, we'll have Brandon Zinner in a little bit joining us, I'm sure from the golf course, has become tradition. I'm Jacob Albrecht alongside Tommy Kester. This is Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. The IHOP hotline will be a little occupied for a minute here, but it's 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, where you can find all your favorites, the house faves, for just $6 Monday through Friday. Fellas, let's get into it. Before we do, though, Chad. How did last week go, Chad?
Oh God.
I'm not exactly sure how that.
I think I was 5-0-1. I think I'm making a comeback. I think I'm back to 500. Paul Savage is shaking in his boots. He's been sitting on his high horse for weeks, and we're coming for you, Savage.
I could see this coming. Did you see the grin on his face when he started out the conversation?
I know he had a good
big, like,
I know he had a good
like,
week.
Hey, who's winning? I could see it coming a mile away.
All right. Well, it's here, and I'm coming for you. We have six games to pick, as we normally do. We will pick three games, three college games. We will pick three pro games. It's a K-State bye week this week, our first one of those. So we'll get into all of those things as well. Jad, hit the music, and let's start in the college ranks. There aren't a lot of big-time college games this weekend. One of them is Mizzou at A&M. A&M, a two-point favorite in this game. Paul, we'll let you start. See if you can rebound from your stumble down the rankings here. How do you see this one playing out?
You know something? I've not been on Missouri's bandwagon, I mean, since last year. Last year, I cast aspersions upon the University of Missouri's football team with comments like they're not physical, they're not very good up front. I didn't like the way they lined up a lot of the time. Same thing a little bit this year. I think Missouri might be the most overrated football team in America. And because of that, I'm going to go ahead and take 2 points And I'm going to go ahead and take Texas A&M. That may be crazy, but I'm going with an old Southwest Conference school.
TJ, this line has moved a little bit. I think it's even. We're taking it at 2 because that's where it was when I checked this morning. I think it's already to 2.5 for A&M at home. What does that tell you, and what are you doing with this game?
It tells me that Paul is, in fact, crazy, because I'm definitely picking the zoo in this one. I think that the only reason this line is so small, what I've been telling myself, is that it was such a fluky game from Mizzou against Vanderbilt, and I think that that's what lowered it. If they win that game by over a touchdown, this is going to be a Mizzou favorite in this game. I think that the odds makers are really looking at that one a lot. A&M, I know it's in College Station, but I just think this Mizzou team is significantly more talented than them, even with all the assets that they have there. But I think that Brady Cook being a better quarterback going into that environment, I think Mizzou can get the job done.
A&M has a big win at Florida. Other than that, it's McNeese State, Bowling Green, Arkansas, who's not very good. Notre Dame was a loss. Tommy, I'm struggling with this one, honestly. They're playing this at Kyle Field. I mean, it is at Kyle Field. What do you think on this one?
I'm really excited about this game. I mean, both of these teams are good, and I really like Mike Elko a lot. I think that he will do the trick in College Station and get the Aggies back to where they need to be. He had a tremendous amount of success at Duke, but it's going to take some time. It's not an overnight thing for Mike Elko, and it's wild to me that you've got a top 10 team in Missouri, and don't get me wrong, I'm not a Missouri fan whatsoever, but it's wild to me that a top 10 Missouri Tigers team is, I know they're on the road, but they're the dogs against a team that, yeah, they might be in the top 25, but they're number 25, and Missouri's getting points. I'm going to take those points. I'm going to take Missouri. I think that they're going to be able to go down to College Station and get the win. The time will come for Texas A&M and Mike Elko, but it's not going to be this week.
This would be the statement win for them. It's at Kyle Field. I'm going to bet on Kyle Field here. I think Kyle Field can take them to a field goal. I really struggle with this one. Really, really struggle with this one. But I'm just going to take the home team because I think more people are betting Missouri, which kind of seems fishy to me. I'll take A&M at home. And we'll learn a lot about these two teams as we make it this week. All right, Baylor, Iowa State. We took this one looking for some, you know, a little Big 12 action in our picks. So Baylor, Iowa State, the Cyclones. It's not a surprise that they're 4-0. We thought they might be. They finished last year really strong. But they really, I mean, they have that win over Iowa on the road. That's kind of what they hang their hat on. That's a whole lot of points, TJ, 12.5 points. You comfortable laying that kind of number?
I don't know. This is a really tough one. I'm definitely just going to steer clear of this one with the wallet for sure. But, you know, Iowa State, I just don't think Baylor's that great, honestly. I think Dave Aranda is really on the hot seat. They played Colorado closer than I thought that they would, but I was in Boulder as well. So maybe they are just pretty good on the road, and there's something to be said about that. But I think this one, being in Ames, Iowa State's 4-0 for a reason. I think they're a surprise 4-0 team. I didn't expect them to be that good this early. But I think that they're better than Baylor. So I think they can win by 2 touchdowns. I'm going to take 4.
Baylor at Utah kept it within 12 points. At Colorado kept it within 12 points. Against BYU last week kept it within 12 points. Paul, I'll make you smile with this one. I'm going to take the points here. I'm taking those points. 12.5, I should say. I'll take the 12.5 points. I think Iowa State's going to win the game, but that's a too big a number for me. So I'll take the 12.5 points, and I'll take Paul's Baylor Bears and get the points. What do you think, big man?
Well, I think you're smart in doing that. That's a lot of points, and Baylor isn't that good. The one asset that we have playing Iowa State. Listen, we Baylor grads have found out that Iowa State grads make good employees. We enjoy hiring them, and they do good work, and we're glad to have them on our staffs. And so with that being said, I'm going to take Baylor as well, and let's just keep the tradition going. I'm taking Baylor as if anybody would surprise, but I'm taking it because of the points.
Tommy?
You know, this is less about Baylor and more about Iowa State for me. Iowa State has the opportunity to sort of plant their flag as a team that should be considered to win a Big 12 championship. And they weren't on my short list at the beginning of the season as a team that could compete for a Big 12 championship. Matt Campbell, it's been a roller coaster for him in Ames, but it's, I think, trending back up for the Cyclones. So for me, it's less about Baylor and more about Iowa State. Did you know that this season, Iowa State is 2-0 against the spread when they've been 12.5-point favorites or more? So knowing that, I'm going to take Iowa State. I'm going to lay the 12.5. I think they win by 2 touchdowns. Wow. I really think that this is another opportunity for them to show that they're in the top echelon of the Big 12.
Let's move to another Big 12 game, Kansas at Arizona State. Tommy, I'll let you start with the Jayhawks. You've been front and center at all their, you know, games this year. Do you think they bounce back at any point? Like, how do you handle them right now?
Vibes are way down. They're way down in Lawrence, and I didn't know that it could get so bad so quick. And we've talked about it all week that at least my belief was that the game on Saturday at Arrowhead against TCU was the first time this season that the Jayhawks didn't look like the better team in a loss. TCU outclassed them basically from start to finish, in my opinion. That's really even more difficult to bounce back from. And until it's proven otherwise to me, I'm going to take Arizona State. I don't think that Kansas will bounce back. I'm going to need the Jayhawks to prove it before I can really feel comfortable taking them again. So I'm going to take Arizona State.
TJ, I mean, at some point, can KU play good football? Like, I'm not going to be stunned if we all take Arizona State here, but I mean, can you, at what point do you get any indication they can turn this around?
I've been thinking about this all week because I feel like for the last 3 weeks, I've kept saying something's got to give. KU will be the better team in one of these, but you know, I think what's the saying that if it flies like a goose and it swims like a duck and flies like a duck, it's probably a duck. I don't know if I'm at that point yet, but I feel like Vegas has more faith than I do only making this a 2.5-point spread. So I'm going to have to take Arizona State, and this is coming from the guy who, after the Lindenwood win, I said that KU was going to win the Big 12. So I'll lay in that. I'll eat that one. So I'm going to be wrong about that.
I don't know right now, based on kind of the body language and the vibe, if Lance Leipold is ready to make a difficult decision if he needs to and make a change, or at least a temporary change at quarterback. And until I get the sense that they can do something like that, I just can't pick KU. I just can't right now. They just keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. Going on the road, it doesn't make me feel any better. I don't want to bet on Arizona State. I'm not going to actually bet this way, but I'm not going to pick Kansas either until they show us they can get something figured out. So I'll go with Arizona State. Paul, a chance for an island.
Wow,
here.
You know, it's not a very good island, though. This is, you know, I mean, we don't have a lot of room on this island because we got a palm tree and me. A palm tree and me is on this island, and that is it. Nothing else on this island. By the way, congratulations, you guys. You are all espousing just exactly what I said 3 weeks ago. Remember the first time that I didn't take KU? Because we were all taking KU at the beginning. We thought they were going to be pretty good. I said, guys, I don't think they're that good. I don't know if they can bounce back from this. And I went away from Kansas 3 weeks ago, which has helped me build my lead up with you guys. But an island. Dang, Tommy, an island with KU. I'm telling you, maybe I think, what should I do? You tell me.
It's your pick, big man. It's whatever you want to do.
Because I was going to go the opposite of whatever you said, so that's what I was going to. But anyway, the point is that it's an island. It's not a great island. I'll take KU. This is a mistake. I'm going to regret it.
I'd take the island if I were you, Savage. Just Arizona State's not very good. that's the other part of this that makes it hard. Yikes. Just play a good game, please.
How about a good game?
This is a nightmare scenario for Kansas. God, right. It makes us all sick. All right, let's go to the NFL. Bills at Texans. You gonna give me the points at home with the Texans? I'm gonna take it. The Bills got embarrassed. The Texans didn't play well last week either, though. And so I think you're going to get a bounce back from both teams. And when you get a bounce back from both teams, I'm taking the points at home with the Texans. This one's simple. Now, am I like overly confident in it? Not necessarily. But I'm taking home points with Houston. TJ?
I want to be clear that you're not getting points. You're getting point. There is one singular point that you are getting there from Houston. So basically a pick 'em for that reason. I'm going to pick the Bills. I think that they're going to win this one on the road. I think that they're a really good team. I think that, you know, last week they didn't have it. It was a good team that they played. I'm not all the way sold on Houston as I thought that I would be preseason. They're a really good team, but I think the Bills are better.
Tommy, do you agree?
I don't. I'm going to actually side with you and go with the Texans in this. I just think that with the way that the Texans organization has moved in the last year, that this favors them. They're two teams in completely different spots where, yeah, the Bills are, I don't even really want to call it a rebuild, but they've had to retool offensively. There's no doubt about that. And there's going to be ups and downs. Last week was a down. Actually, it was a down for both teams. But last week was, I think, a more expected down for the Bills, where I was just blown away by the way that Houston played. I think that Houston has a much better chance of bouncing back, so I'm going to take the Texans at home.
Paul, if you're a coach and you're a defensive coach, which you are, and you're in the Bills locker room and you watch Derrick Henry just run all over you last week, are you probably going to make some adjustments to try and stop the run this week?
Well, I'll probably adjust what I'm going to do with my safety. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's going to be some things that we probably have to change. And by the way, just, you know, I'm kind of with you guys, because if you remember when these teams were all 0-0 and we were kind of kicking around who's going to be in the Super Bowl, one of my outside teams was, and I know you probably remember, I said I thought the Texans had a shot at maybe being in the conference finals, you know, getting to some point where they're a factor in the playoffs. And I don't know that I still don't believe that. This is going to be a great football game. This is like flipping a coin. If ever there was a game I feel like I could flip a coin, I'd flip it.
Sure.
But I'm going to go ahead and go with the Texans for the mere fact that it's a home game. And I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but I'm going to take the Texans just based upon the fact I made the comment they could literally be in the Super Bowl if everything falls in place. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Texans. Not sure about it. This is a coin flip for me.
I just think they're going to sell out to stop the run, TJ, and that opens things up for CJ Stroud. But you're on the Bills.
Give me the island.
Island there. All right, let's go to our next NFL game, Cowboys-Steelers. It feels like these teams never play, and they play now. And that's all the history, you know, the two-storied franchises. Steelers are 2.5-point favorites at home, which I do think is a pretty interesting line. I think the days of the Cowboys skewed lines are behind us and have been for a while, so this feels a little more true. Justin Fields at quarterback. Guys, I went first last time, so I won't go first this time. TJ, you start us off on this one.
This feels like a trap game and a half for the Cowboys. I mean, I don't or the Steelers. I don't even know who it's a trap game for. But
trap game for somebody.
If somebody's getting trapped in this game, if you're the fan base of either team, I don't feel good at all going into Sunday. You know, I wasn't huge on the Steelers. I remember that I was keep going back to that week one win where they didn't even score a touchdown and they still won the game with the Falcons, and that's kind of what set the tone for them being one of the undefeated teams. And so the offense really hasn't been stellar to my understanding, but the Cowboys haven't really sold me either. I'm going to say in Pittsburgh, I'm going to give them a home field advantage. I'll lay the 2.5 to the Steelers.
You agree with that, Tommy? What are you thinking on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I really think it's not even going to have much to do with the offensive play for Pittsburgh. It's going to be Pittsburgh's defense, and that's really the Mike Tomlin special and the reason why Pittsburgh has gotten off to the start that they have. And they're pretty stout, and especially, you know, when I think them, you know, they're going to be going up against Dak and, you know, just kind of a lackluster offense for the most part, especially a week ago. I mean, the Cowboys couldn't really do much against the Giants, even though they did get the win. Knowing all of that, I'm going to go with TJ. I'm going to take the Steelers. I'll lay the points.
Paul, do the Cowboys bounce back? Can they do anything again? You know, they didn't look overly impressive against the Giants. Now it's the Steelers. How do you see this one?
How good is the Cowboys defense going to be this weekend? That's my question. How good will they be?
Depends on if Micah Parsons plays. I mean, that's a question mark.
Well, even with Micah Parsons, they haven't exactly lit up the world on the defensive side of the ball. I have questions about the defense with the Cowboys. Steelers are always going to be solid. They're a well-coached football team. I think that this is, and particularly being in Pittsburgh, I guess I really hate to do this, Jacob, but I'm going to set you up for an island. And I want you to know I'm setting you up for this. I'm not letting you have this. I want you to take the Cowboys on your pick. I'm going to take the Steelers and give you an island with the Cowboys.
I'm glad I didn't pick first because I was taking the Cowboys anyway. I do like the Cowboys in this game. This will be a game I actually bet. This will be one of my actual betting games. I just don't trust the Steelers' offense. That's what it is for me. And I think, you know, Parsons or not, Zimmer and that defense need to make a statement. They still have some talented players. I see you know, I don't know what it is. I feel the Cowboys a little bit this week. I think they'll be able to slow down the Steelers' offense. And at any point, we know the Cowboys can go off and go crazy. Does it happen against a defense like this? I don't know. On the road? I don't know. They look good on the road against Cleveland. I'll take the Cowboys. Not just because it's an island. I actually do like the Cowboys and the points in that one. All right, fellas. Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
Chiefs, 5.5-point favorites at home against the Saints. Tommy, you can start us on this one. No Rashi Rice. This is full life without Rashi Rice. You comfortable with 5.5?
I actually am. I think this is going to be the time that we see Kansas City break through. And I think that they win. I think that they win by a touchdown, maybe 10 points against a Saints team that, has kind of fallen off a cliff offensively after the first 2 weeks of the regular season. And I don't think that it's going to be because of, really anything passing related. I think Kareem Hunt is going to have an incredible game.
Missed practice yesterday.
In his first game back inside Arrowhead. I really think that. So I'm gonna ride with the Chiefs. I'm gonna lay the 5.5. I just like them in this spot at home with everything going on.
Hunt missed practice. I don't know what that's all about. I assume he's okay. TJ, are you good here? It's really, to me, it's a question about the Saints more than it is the Chiefs. What do you think about 5.5 points?
Yeah, seems like a lot of points whenever you don't have Isaiah Pacheco or Rashee Rice on the field. So this would be the game, based on history, if the Chiefs are going to lose one. It feels like something has to give one of the weeks, and this would be the one to do it in. But that being said, I am going to the Chiefs game, and there's no chance that I'm going to bet against the Chiefs. So I'm going to make my pick with the Chiefs as well here. I'm going to say that they cover. I can see a Kareem Hunt game as well. I definitely don't think we're going to see another Carson Steele game after what we've seen the past couple of weeks. So I think this is the Hunt coming out party, the reappearing party. I don't know what you call that.
Yeah, I thought he had kind of had that last week. I thought he looked good. He certainly looked better than I thought he would. Looked like he had a little more juice than I thought he would. I like the Chiefs here. To me, this isn't so much about any of that. It's just that I think the Saints are a bit of a pretender. It's that the Chiefs have had good history against Derek Carr. I just don't think the Saints are as good as people think they are. Willing to be wrong on that. The Chiefs will get tested by another good running back in Alvin Kamara that can catch passes, which has always been a challenge for them. But I think the defense steps up in a big, big way in this one. I like the Chiefs. I'll lay those points. I'm comfortable with it within a touchdown. Paul, you got a chance at an island with the Saints. You going to take it?
Well, here's the thing. The beautiful part about this is I am rooting for the Chiefs. And when you're going to give some points, you can still cover the for a win for me and still win the game. How many 1-point games has Kansas City won this year? How many times have they been underneath, say, a field goal? A bunch. So I think it's safe to say Chiefs cover and win the game all at the same time. I'm going to take the Saints, Chiefs by 3.
Chiefs by 3. Okay, I could see that too. I mean, that's kind of the way the Chiefs are playing.
That's the way they're playing.
So we'll get Brandon's picks. He'll send those in, and we'll mark those down as well. But yeah, look, let's all just hope we all had a little luck with our wallets, I think, in talking to people last week. Let's hope that trend continues, and we'll see how these picks go. But there it is. There's your picks, everybody, on a Friday, a tradition here on Sports Daily. Another tradition, we're going to talk a little high school football. TJ will stick around, and we'll do that next as we make our way through week 5 of the high school football.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste, because you know all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Football season is here as well. We'll talk about it on Sports Daily. All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here. Jacob Albrock, Paul Savage, TJ Cleland sticking around with us. Tommy will be back in a bit. We're talking a little high school football. Catch It Kansas Friday. Glad to be here on a Catch It Kansas Friday. We are into week number 5 of the high school football season. TJ, you guys have a full slate coming up. I don't see the, you know, the marquee City League game this week. But there are other good games around the area. What is catching your eye at Ketchikansas the most this week?
Yeah, just a couple of them. The game of the week this week is kind of the story, which is really kind of the story of the high school football season, is teams kind of making surprises, teams that are good that we didn't really expect to be that good. And that's kind of the true in the game of the week. You know, it's Andover at Eisenhower. Andover, obviously, with the losing streak coming in, that whole story, they're trying to get them back to 500, above 500 this week, which would be quite the feat after, you know, going 0-9 last year. Eisenhower, they had a lot of success last year. It was the best season in school history. If you go back a year before that, they only won 3 games. And so that's kind of the story of you go from 0-9 to what they are now, and then Eisenhower going from, you know, 3-10 or whatever it was to go into, you know, being a contender in Class 5A. That's the game of the week. Another good one that I think will be a lot of fun as Pratt is coming to Wichita playing collegiate. Pratt's undefeated. You know, they knocked off Hoisington, who's always a team out there around the Great Bend area that's really, really good. And collegiate, they've lost to Andale. They scraped by Wellington. I think that they're a really good team. That's probably the best game you're going to find in Class 3A outside of Andale Collegiate that we saw last week. So a lot of fun in that one as well.
I was at the Andover, Mike. Kids were cheerleading or whatever. I was at the Andover game. I thought they looked really good. They were physical. They were, you know, much more so than a year ago. I think that has been a pretty fun story this year. What about Derby and Hutch? You know, I think we want to build that. These are the two big schools that in the last 20 years, you know, two of them anyway, that have had this. We sort of saw Hutch kind of getting back on track. I don't know. How big an underdog is Hutch in this game?
If you were asking me to make a spread, I'll set it at like 12.5 points, something like that. And that's not a knock on Hutch. The stat that I pulled up for that game is Hutch lost to Andover Central week one, who Andover Central is probably a top 5 team in our area. Hutch, though, after that, they have not allowed a single point. They have held teams scoreless for 3 straight weeks. They've won by a combined, I don't know, like 40 points or whatever it is. So a really good team there. Terrell King, he's a wide receiver / running back / safety / cornerback / punt returner for them. I imagine he'll be playing at the Division I level. I think he's still a junior, I believe, maybe a senior this year. I can't remember. But a really good player there in Hutch. But that just tells you how good of a team Derby is. They've got so many guys that are – this is pretty much – I mean, they could compete with junior colleges, I think, at this point. They're so good. They've got so many prospects that are heading to the next level. And when you got a guy like Brandon Clark leading all those next-level prospects, they're the best team in the state probably.
You know, I hate to ask this question because it's a City League question. And I'm going to ask you, are there any stories that we need to follow? Any storylines? Give me something, anything that we need to follow between now and the time the playoffs start. Because, you know, the three big teams have all played each other. The City League championship is taken care of. Northwest is going to win that. Are there any stories? And what are you following out of the City League at this point, at least until we get to the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we talk about Wichita East a lot on this show for some reason, probably because one of the guys coaching is the guy sitting in the chair right there. But Wichita East is such an interesting story because I still think that they're probably one of the most talented teams in the area or the entire state. They're probably top 10 talented team in the state with all the guys that they have. And it just seems like they just haven't really kind of played up to what they can be. You know, they're a team that probably is right there with Northwest talent-wise. They're a team that was probably better than Capen. They have another tough one. Highland Park tonight, I'm going to be out at that one. Highland Park is a team that has not found a ton of success up in the Topeka area, but they've had so many athletes come through there. They had the Trey Richardson kid who went to Hutch and was like the best junior college player in the country. They're off to a 4-0 start. That's another test for East. That's how they can bounce back. I think this will get them above 500. That's kind of one of the biggest stories that I'm watching. Capen obviously is another big story. As you said, I don't think they can win the City League at this point, but just how good they can be. Nobody really expected them to be as good as they were last year. But now being in Class 4A, if they can win enough of these games, they're going to get some pretty good seating. And 4A is going to be tough. So I'm watching that story as well.
TJ, what else? You mentioned some of the 3A. Are there any real small schools out there with games that, you know, should get us excited tonight?
A couple of them. I know there's one. This is still 4A, but I still think it's a really fun matchup. Wamigo and Bueller is going to be a good one tonight. When you get kind of the cross-state matchup, Wamigo's coming over to play in that one. Bueller looks really good. I think their only loss is to Great Bend, who's a ranked 5A team, and Wamigo's a team that's been competing for state championships every single year. So big test there. Cheney's traveling out to Hoisington. That's going to be a good one we're going to have tonight. Obviously, Cheney's one of the most talented teams in 3A, if not the best team in 3A. Hoisington's a really talented 2A with state championship last year, seeing how they can bounce back in that one. I know tonight Hutch Trinity going down to Conway Springs. I think that's a 2A, 1A matchup. Conway's the best team in 1A. Should be a lot of fun there. And another one that I'm really excited about is Circle and Winfield. Winfield, another one of these teams, like I said, that's kind of having the coming out party. I think that they haven't had five win season since 2019.
Yeah.
And they were off to a 3-0 start. They just fell to McPherson last week, who obviously we know who's super good. But it's crazy how many – I think that if they win tonight, it'll be – they've only had a 4-win season twice since 2013, I think is what the stat was. So another one of these teams. It's a lot of fun to see these teams just get excited about football whenever they kind of had the lulls throughout the years.
I love it. What about I wanted to ask you this too, TJ, before we let you go. Some of the individual players out there, it's watching Avery Johnson that has it on my mind. Some of the big names, Lincoln Cure, we've known about him. Are any individuals standing out as guys we might need to look for on Saturdays here pretty soon?
Oh, I mean, I tweeted last week. If you haven't seen it, go check out the video. Desaun Brame, the kid from Derby, the tight end. They put him at kick returner and punt returner now. That tells you how athletic and tight end that he is. It is absurd.
Wow.
I tweeted, I think he's the best pass catcher at the high school level that I've seen. I mean, he could play wide receiver for a lot of these schools. So I think that he might even play some wide receiver at Tennessee. Super athletic kid there. Really looking forward to him. I know Derby's got another one, Max Robinson, one of their offensive linemen who's getting recruited by literally everybody. East has a couple kids that are going to the next level to play in Division One. Northwest, I really like Jalen Mason, the quarterback there. He's got an Iowa State and KU offer. John Michael Fountain from Northwest has like 4 or 5 or 6 offers. A linebacker there is going to be really good. So a lot of talent in the City League. Should be a lot of fun. I could go on and on, but I think those are probably the ones that come to mind first.
Well, of course, you can catch it all on the Catch It Kansas show on KWCH tonight and the family of networks. I should say KSCW tonight, KWCH later this weekend. You can, of course, find everything at catchitkansas.com on the Catch It Kansas app. And then, TJ, again, remind us of the pregame festivities that you guys have this year.
Yeah, so we've all got our live shots and everything throughout 12 News at 4, 12 News at 5, 12 News at 6. And now we've also got the 12 News kickoff show. That airs on the 12 News app. You can get that on the Catch It Kansas Facebook page as well. This week we've got the full slate back again, me, Brandon, and Rachel Hallam. They'll all be live at their games all, and we'll kind of just toss it around the top 5 games of what we think of them, who we think is going to win them. We're going to break down the game of the week, top couple of games, and put our high school ball knowledge to the test. We do the picks on here. I think last week in the high school picks, I went like 1-4. So it's not just college and professional that I'm not good at. I'm also not great at the high school rankings, I guess.
it's a fool's errand, but we love it and we do it anyway. All right. Follow TJ on social at KWCHTJ. At Catch It Kansas. They'll have all the fun videos and stuff. And then the recap, of course, tonight on the Catch It Kansas show. Enjoy it, TJ. Happy Friday Night Lights.
It should be some good football weather tonight. I'm ready to not be sweating by the end of the night.
Yeah, that's true, too. I'm not ready for the cold, though. So we'll take this. We'll take this light go into fall. All right. That's TJ Cleland. Follow it at Catch It Kansas. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little more football on Sports Daily as we make our way through this week-ending edition of the program. You've got your Text to Win contest. You can win some HTO. Text keyword T to 20357. We'll come back. More Sports Daily right after this. Welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Paul Savage with you now as we sort of reset things a little bit here in hour number 2, getting ready to wrap up the week. The IHOP hotline is back open for you at 869-1240. You can also leave us your comments on our video streams, which are available to you, of course, on 12 News Connected Plus, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Our picks are in the books. And we're having a little fun here on a Friday, Paul, getting ready for some Royals playoff baseball, getting ready for the weekend. You know, you and I haven't talked a ton of KU in the times we've been together. this mess that has been the KU season. Tommy and I have talked about it a lot. When you watch this and you see the first real, we'll call it heat that Lance Leipold has felt since he's been the coach at KU, it's getting a little tense there. Jalen Daniels continues to play poorly by his own standard. Where do you fall with it? Do you think KU should be looking at making a change at quarterback? Do you and I don't even say that like anybody behind Jalen Daniels is more talented, but what I just don't know how you can keep running out there somebody who's not completing a ton of passes, intercepting it, and maybe it's a coaching issue, which is the other thing, and it's an offensive coordinator issue, but doing nothing, Paul, seems crazy to me. KU feels like they're doing nothing to try and fix any of this.
Well, my question is, do you think that the KU offense is being all that it can be? Because what I've watched
of KU, absolutely not.
Not. So that I don't and the first thing you do is you don't blame the kids. The first job of a football coach is to put your team in a great position to win and be successful.
Sure.
I don't get that sense, Jacob. I don't get the sense that that's where KU is at.
So you're now, more on coaching.
I really am. I don't want to blame the kids yet because we know that Jalen could be a great quarterback. He's very athletic. He's got a great arm. I mean, I think he's got a sense of the game. I don't think he's being put in a situation where he can be
either.
Successful. And that's where I put the blame for right now. It's not on the kids. It's on the coaches. Now, that flies in the face of Coach Leipold because you look at him, you think to yourself, geez, all the success this guy has had. Look at the rep he had going into this year. I mean, he was adored by KU Football Nation. Everybody thought this is the right guy for the job. Well, you know something? There's something wrong. There's something wrong. I don't know if it's the head coach, but I know there's something wrong on the staff. And I think that might go all the way down to the offensive line coach, maybe even to the receiver coach, to the running back coach, obviously to the coordinator, because it seems like things are out of sort, don't they?
Well, and now it's bleeding in because now they're not playing good defense for the last couple of weeks.
That's right.
It's all spiral. That's what that's my thing. Yeah. Like, I don't know. And I don't know, maybe there's not an answer. Maybe they're just not as good as we thought they could be. That's a possibility, I suppose. But that I just can't figure doing the same thing over and over again to the same result. And that's being too general with it, I know. But if there's a disagreement on how much blame needs to go to Grimes, the offensive coordinator, or Jalen Daniels, the quarterback, the reality is that combination of people is not working. You know, whichever side of that you take, to continue to put those two out there in the same situations, that's what I can't wrap my head around, right? Like, at what point do you change something if you're Leipold, and do you just force the issue until something, you know, until you get a better result?
Mm-hmm. You got to do something, though. And sometimes, you know, not doing anything, you know, a lot of times people say, you know, one of the best things you can do is leave things alone and let them work themselves out. Not in this case, because obviously right now you're almost halfway through a football season and things aren't working out. Expectations are not being met. You are, Lance Leipold, you are a guru. You are a savior. You've got to do something. And I don't know what it is, although I think I know what it is, but I don't need to say what I think it is, on at least at this particular time. But I'll tell you, it's interesting to me that he's not catching more, you know, flack than a lot of coaches would be. I mean, sure, he's getting some criticism, but it's not him. He's not catching the flack because of the success that he had, the expectations of KU Nation. But man, you got to make some changes. You got to do something. And I'm telling you, you look at teams at the pro level. Boy, oh boy, when things go flat, things go south, what happens, Jacob? Changes are made. People are changed. Now, I'm not saying he can go out and get anybody he wants, but there are people within that football organization that you can shuffle things around. You can change this, change that. But whatever's going on right now, it's not working. I got off the KU bandwagon 3 weeks ago, ran three straight on Friday football picks because I was that guy that was going against KU. And week after week, I watched my fellow pickers talk about, well, this is the week they switch it around. Well, no, no, this is the week we switch it around. Next, no, this is the week when I know they're going to switch it. And the switch around has never come. I don't think doing nothing is an option at this point.
Well, I don't either. I think you're going to get the same result over and over. But that Bingo. Game will be Saturday. It would be great. I mean, it would be therapeutic if KU would just come out and smash them.
Well, about that?
Like they should be able to. Like we thought they'd be able to.
Yeah, I know.
My concern has become that it's spiraling out of control.
Well,
and you know, before the TCU game, I didn't feel that way. I thought, yeah, KU's been better. They're just not finishing these games. And that held out hope for me that they could still salvage this. Then the TCU game happened, and they were not better. TCU was better than they were on that particular day, at least. And that, and you've seen Leipold get a little, there's been a little more animosity with the media. And I'm like, you know, we've seen this before other places. Like, this is not good. This feels like it's getting out of control a little bit now. It's no longer just about not being able to execute late in a game to get a win. Now more about is everybody still invested here? Like this, and that has been this doomsday nightmare scenario we've feared for a long time.
Right.
Build a new stadium. You have these expectations. It's all built to this season. Jalen Daniels is back. All these things. And it could not have fallen flatter out of the gates. I guess they could have lost to Lindenwood, but this is like a worst case scenario, Paul, for what this season could be and is for KU right now.
May not be salvageable. I know nobody said those words. I just said them, Jacob. This may not be a salvageable season. Oh gosh, I don't want to be the one to say that. But you show me, you show me anything I can hang a hat on. You show me show me anything, because I don't see anything changing. I haven't seen anything change. I've watched enough KU football over the first half of the season to know that this is where they are. This is who they are. This is their identity. I haven't seen enough changes to justify saying that. But right now, this season, as it now sets, is not salvageable. I hate to say that. But it might be, this is it. Start building. Start doing some things. Get some players in. Do some things. Get some young kids some playing time. Start taking a look at some plays. Maybe check out some new formations. Check out some new, ways you line up on defense. You know, I don't know. I don't know what it takes. But something needs to be shook up. Something needs to be changed, in my opinion.
I agree. Something. Not nothing.
Something.
Something, yeah. Not nothing. Real quick, K-State's on a bye week. We have not talked this week about what you saw from them last week. The exact opposite. Everything feels just right for K-State, doesn't it, right now?
Right.
You see Avery play that way. You go into your bye. You make it through. The BYU game was the aberration, right? You have the two wins against Oklahoma State and Arizona. Now you're getting into a winnable portion of the schedule. I know it's road games, and Colorado's probably better than we thought. Well, they're at least at the high end of what we thought they could be. But you're feeling right. You're feeling real good right now if you're a K-State fan.
Well, I didn't feel good with BYU. I can tell you that. I thought, oh my goodness, will the real Kansas State University football team stand up? And of course, I think they've stood up and said, no, 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 that wasn't us. And I like the word you used for that game, an aberration. I think that might be the right word, Jacob. Aberration. I hope that's right. I think that was right. But this is quite frankly just the opposite of K-State. And KU, I was thinking that KU was going to be that team that we were going to be doing the talking about, and it turns out it's going to be K-State. We're seeing Avery Johnson developed at a very slow, plodding, scripted way, and I don't think that that's all bad, because he is going to be a good one. I don't think there's any question about that. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting to watch this team develop. They're better than I thought they were going to be, and I think that probably speaks for a lot of people, which actually kind of just says something about, we were talking about coaching with Leipold and his staff. It says something about the K-State coaching staff and what a good job they're doing, and they're bringing these kids along at the rate they want, at the pace they want, doing the things that they want done. And one coaching staff I'm very critical, and the other I'm tipping my cap.
Well, they made a change at offensive coordinator, too. We have not talked about that probably enough, Paul,
you know, we have focused so much on how the change at offensive coordinator is not working at KU. But at K-State, Connor Riley in that offense, remember, they changed coordinators too. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's going pretty well. And it seems to be growing and getting a little bit better, right? Avery's playing better. Dylan Edwards is getting more comfortable. We knew Giddens was a star, but that offensive line that had some questions this year appears to be pretty good. So credit there too. We've only talked about the negative side of the offensive coordinator changes here in the state of Kansas, but Connor Riley's done, I think, a really good job with those changes at K-State. And, you know, Paul, quite simply, that's a team that can win the Big 12. Kansas State.
Sure can.
Nothing changes there.
There's no question in my mind that's a possibility. Now, it's not going to be easy, but I think that's a real possibility.
Because the league's is good.
Well, anybody if we go down the roster of games left, I can tell you right now, I can almost make a case for everybody that they play that they can win the game.
In an individual game, I agree. I completely agree. Everything we just said, when Kansas and Kansas State play, you're going to tell me Kansas doesn't have a chance to win that game? You're crazy.
That's right.
Of course they do.
You're exactly right.
And that's why we watch Baylor Iowa State. That game's interesting to me this weekend.
It is.
In kind of a slow week in college football, to be quite honest. All right, we'll take a final break here. We'll come back. We'll get you all. There is a lot going on in the Odyssey family of networks and the sports world. We'll get you all caught up on it next.